This episode was brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Longtime supporters like Greg and Pearl Morgan, Amy Swan, Greg Bench, Joe Robertson, and Dan George, and new patrons like Kate Lamb, Andred, and Carl Davis are the people who make this podcast possible. Stick around for an extended shout-out at the end. Now on to the episode.
Welcome to another episode of Father and Son Watch Horror Movies. I am your co-host, the Father, a.k.a. Pastor Matt, a.k.a. Matt Rawlings, and I am joined, as always, by my trusty co-host,
Jackson the Son, and welcome to a new tradition, a new staple, if you will, in our lives at least. It's the fourth annual Horror Academy Awards. It seems everybody's beating us to the punch, it seems. That's a live studio audience you heard, by the way.
That's correct.
Yes, filmed in the beautiful Dolby Theater. No, so yeah, it's we're getting to this late. We usually like to do this right after our top 10 lists, but it's been 2024 has been the busy year of all busy years. So
we've been a wee bit busy. I am putting together my notes for my dissertation. I am taking a PhD seminar. I am writing papers after paper after paper after paper. I'm getting ready to do a final exam. I got all kinds of stuff, plus working a full-time day job. You have school, plus you are working on some stuff.
Yes, I am.
Can I say what that stuff is, or can you at least give
a taste of
what you're doing?
I can say I've been doing pre-pro on two features, feature productions. Actually, one's a pilot and one's a feature film. And we're starting filming on Saturday. And that'll be for a month. That's 6 days a week, 12-hour a day. And it'll be a lot. But by the end of it, I should have 3 credits on not major motion pictures, but mid-budget motion pictures. Should be fun. So that means that we're trying to get a bunch of stuff banked here or recorded and prepared. I dropped a Patreon video. We've already recorded a bonus episode, and now we're doing our Horror Academy Awards, which I've been sprinkling the polls on the Patreon over the past couple weeks. Just awesome feedback from you guys. If you don't know, the Horror Academy Awards, we do this every year. It's the patrons on our Patreon page who are voting on these. In the case that there's a tie, which there was one this year, we took it to the closed Facebook group. So if you want to vote on next year's Horror Academy Awards, if you want to make your voices heard, because Dad and I were just talking, we watched the Oscars. Oftentimes it feels right, like who's voting on these? Because it does not feel like popular sentiment. So that if you want to be part of the Academy, you can join our closed Facebook group or join our Patreon page. And be involved. But yeah, now we've got...
Well, join the closed Patreon page. I mean, the closed Facebook, you only get to vote on tiebreakers. So if you want to vote, you got to go to the Patreon. It's only $2.50 a month. All money goes to that young man earning IMDb credits.
Feel like a carnival barker.
Getting him through. I am a lawyer, so it's not much difference. So there is that. We failed to talk about one thing. We were talking about the Oscars and how much we actually enjoyed the Oscars this year. Yeah. That hasn't always been the case. Mm-hmm. And we forgot to mention one thing, which was best special effects went to Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, huge win. That was so exciting. I mean, I know that team is actually, it was kind of a smaller budget, you know, obviously not an independent production, but kind of a lower budget movie and a smaller team. I mean, to see those guys at the Oscars holding their Godzilla toys and going up on stage to accept an Oscar was just awesome. That was really cool. And I definitely felt like, even though I've talked about in the past that I don't necessarily feel myself that Godzilla Minus One would make my horror list, because I see it more as like a kaiju action thriller sort of thing.
It's okay. You can be wrong.
That seems to be the case, because we put it on our polls due to popular demand. We put it on our polls for the Horror Academy Awards, and it garnered quite a bit of sympathy. We're not going to reveal anything yet, but
not yet.
We've got 10 categories here, And
we should say before we jump in, which we'll do just in a second, typically we have guests. In the past, we've had Brian Scott and Greg the Bench on, but we're doing this on the fly. Like, we literally decided to do this a few hours ago.
Yeah.
We thought, okay, we've got a brief window. We can do this. Let's jump. And so we just didn't have time to have anybody on. We apologize for that. We love having people on to do this, but we just didn't have the time. So here we go. Shall we jump into a category?
Let's do it. Who's going first, me or you?
Why don't you go ahead and, well, let me do this one. You'll do the next one.
Sounds good.
All right. So for best sound design in a horror feature, the nominees are, for some reason, Skinamarink. Oh my gosh. How did you come up with that? You've been talking to Joel. Skinamarink, Talk to Me, Last Voyage of the Demeter, Infinity Pool, and Husira, the Bone Woman. And the horror Oscar goes to Talk to Me.
This was one of the tiebreaker categories. Yeah, this was split right down the middle on the Patreon between Talk to Me and Infinity Pool. And it was kind of a weird choice for me to put up all, I don't know why I put all the categories up on Facebook, but it did not matter at all because the only ones that really got votes were Talk to Me and Infinity Pool. That's the split. I'm totally with the results of this one. I thought Talk to Me was a wonderfully designed film. I mean, when we enter the spirit world, it's kind of like we're being enveloped in this really weird kind of eerie soundscape, and it was just awesome stuff. But okay, briefly before we get into it, I hear some murmurings both on Facebook and from my dad just now. Skinamarink, why is Skinamarink on here? Why it only got 1% of the vote? Yeah, well, Skinamarink, if it was going to be nominated for anything, would be nominated for sound design, I think. First of all, I love the movie.
And I would ask, why was it nominated for anything other than Turd of the Year?
The Razzies, right? No, but I love this film. I understand it's not for everyone, but I think, I don't know that you can deny that the sound design was cool. It's a very ambient and enveloping movie. The sound mix is just like horrifying. It just like slowly sets in. It like chills you to the bone. I love the sound design of Skinamarink, and many are saying this is not just me. However, yes, one, it only got 1% of the vote, and I'll let you guess who that vote was. But yeah, I'm all for Skinamarink, but Talk to Me. Yeah, that is the, not only the popular choice, but also a fantastic sound mix. So, I'm with this one.
Okay. Well, I would replace the K with an H and the N with a T. But anyway, I should have gotten the idea just to put a GoPro on my ankle and just walk around and call it a horror movie. But anyway.
I would watch that.
Okay. Well, you've got the next one, buddy. And this is your lane. So go for it.
That's right. Our next category is best editing in a horror feature. This is my forte. I don't know. Can you say that about yourself? This is my area of interest.
I'll say it for you. This is your forte.
Okay. Thank you. And the nominees are Infinity Pool, Evil Dead Rise, Knock at the Cabin, Bo is Afraid, and When Evil Lurks. And the winner is When Evil Lurks.
Yeah. I can guess what you voted for. I know what you voted for even before I looked at it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, my votes aren't always going to be, the popular vote, but, I can respect this one. When Evil Lurks, fantastic editing, fantastic pacing, never lets off the gas. It kind of makes you feel like, this nightmare will never end. It's that kind of feeling. And yeah, a fantastic, you know, with foreign films, sometimes because of the language barrier, the pacing can feel a little bit more sluggish, but I didn't feel that at all with When Evil Lurks. I don't know where you are on that, but, it plays just like a Western movie. It's absolutely horrifying and yeah, definitely a well-deserved win.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with that. You know, we've talked a lot about this in our top 10 list, and so I won't repeat myself, but man, oh man, did that movie stick with me. So well-deserved best editing horror Oscar from a future and, well, current editor. You're doing some additional training right now to do new software and stuff.
Fun stuff. Yeah. But by the way, what I was hinting at earlier, Beau is Afraid was my pick. I don't know where you land on this. We can reveal our nominees who we were rooting for along the way.
Yeah, I'm fine with When Evil Lurks. I thought it was well edited.
Yeah. Mine was Beau is Afraid, but yeah, When Evil Lurks would be my second pick. And I'm happy that, I mean, it was reversed. Beau is Afraid has got the second amount, most amount of votes with 30%, and When Evil Lurks was 40%, but yeah. Fantastic movies, both of them, and yeah, just a great category. This is a strong one. Sometimes when we're making categories, we're like, I don't know, what do we put? I guess this kind of fills that criteria, but not with these last two. These last two have been strong, and from a technical standpoint, I think this was a really great year.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, we talked a lot about this when our top 10. We didn't get a Hereditary. We didn't get a Get Out this year. But we did get, especially technically, some solid films. And so, yeah, I can't argue with that. So shall we move on to the next one? Because I've got, it looks like I have a, I even have a little teleprompter here. I've got a little speech to introduce this.
Yeah, you can read my words if you want. But yeah, I did so by the way, on the Patreon, I put little reads underneath them, like how, presenters would I hate that. I always hate that in the Oscars when they walk out and they go, the camera was invented by Edward Cameron in 1904 and it brings stories to life.
But I would prefer that who was it, Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy, that really awkward Chip and Dale thing they tried to pull off, that was the bomb of the Oscars. That was terrible. So all right. Well, as Jackson writes, the role of the cinematographer is to bring the director's creative vision into the realm of reality. Good DPs do a lot of the heavy lifting as far as communicating the tone and intent of the movie to the audience. In short, they're often indispensable miracle workers. Well, you could write for the Oscars. These five films featuring stunning images brought to life by passionate, hardworking creatives. So here we go. Best cinematography in a horror feature. Cobweb, Philip Lozano. When Evil Lurks, Mariano Suarez. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this one correctly. I only speak dead languages, so El Conde? Is that right? Something like that?
Something like that.
Ed Lachman, Knock at the Cabin, Jaron Blaschke, and Lowell Meyer. And there's no way I'm going to get this one totally correct, but Godzilla Minus One, Kozo Shibasaki. And the winner, by pretty much a landslide, Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, yay. I can't say this was unexpected, and you can see there's a comment down below that I included in the screenshot here from Amy Schwan. Yes. And she says, I saw Godzilla Minus One in black and white. All I can say is that it was stunning. Jealous. Super jealous. We've been talking about Godzilla Minus Color for a while when we're talking about color grading. This is not just we just slapped a black and white filter on it. They've gone in and regraded every shot to look, you know, authentic. And I'm really jealous I didn't get to see it in theaters that way. But yeah, a well-deserved win, Godzilla Minus One. When Evil Lurks was in second place with a respectable 33% of the votes. Yep. But yeah, Godzilla Minus One just really ran off with this one.
I know people are really upset because it's still not streaming. I read or I heard something on a podcast or something the other day that the reason it's not streaming is they had a contract. The only reason they were able to make Godzilla, because Godzilla is currently owned, you know, by the major studio that's getting ready to release, what was it, Godzilla Kong, New Empire, or whatever it is. The contract stated that they could not release it on streaming. They had to pull it from theaters at a certain date, and they could not put it on streaming until so many days after the new Godzilla Kong movie had been in theaters.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, that's what they demanded. So it is coming out on Blu-ray. Hopefully it'll have the black and white version on it.
Yeah.
And so I look forward to that because I want to see it in black and white.
Yeah, 100%. There's some, just something about Godzilla in black and white that is just chilling. I mean, even so, Godzilla got pretty silly pretty quick. Yep. But even in
Come on, you didn't love Son of Godzilla.
I love them, yes, but definitely a far cry from the tone of Godzilla 1954. And even Godzilla Raids Again, the second Godzilla film, it's got that kind of goofiness to it where the suit actors are kind of jumping around and they're not quite slow enough. But that
gritty, which is the one where he like bounces on his tail.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's one of them. Yeah. But the 70s were wild, man. But no, but even in Godzilla Raids Again, when it's still a little bit goofier than the first one, that black and white film stock really, really does a lot.
I agree. Just like another great black and white film, you know, what I'm talking about, it's Joel's favorite.
Maybe
starring Thomas Jane.
And, of course, yeah.
We're talking about The Mist.
Your favorite ending.
Perfect
ending
to a horror movie ever, and in black and white, it's incredible. All righty, well, you're up, buddy. What's next?
The next category is Best Supporting Actor in a Horror Feature. Wow, look at this read up I've got here. I'm not going to read this. That's okay. All right. I'll give it a shot.
Before you go, we should say this. One of the things we started doing last year.
Yeah.
And we're not doing this because we're trying to be woke or politically correct. It just always struck me as strange that there's a best supporting actor and a best supporting actress or a best actor, and best actress, because performances are performances. Are they not?
Right. Yeah.
So when we say best supporting actor, we're talking about male, female, regardless, right?
Right. I think the idea, maybe not historically, I think the idea up until now is that it gives more opportunities for, you know, if it was heavily stacked.
Well, I imagine that's probably what the idea was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. But originally it was just, dames are dames and the guys are guys. If you're going back to you know, the first Oscars in 1929, Hollywood, it's going to shock people. Hollywood was a bit sexist. I know. How could a town that produced Harvey Weinstein be sexist? But that's the way it was. But I just never logically saw it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
All right. So you go ahead and you read your fine script and
oh boy, here we go. Okay, in 2023, as is often the case, the supporting actors stole the show. This was a tight year, and I'll admit there are some major omissions. Here are five secondary protagonists and villains alike that went above and beyond the line of duty to turn in some amazing performances. And here are the nominees. Thank you. Kyle Gallner as Benson in The Passenger. Alyssa Sutherland as Ellie in Evil Dead Rise. Maren Ireland as Rose in Birth Rebirth. Liam Cunningham, Captain Elliot, Last Voyage of the Demeter. And Mia Goth as Gabby in Infinity Pool. And the winner is Alyssa Sutherland, Ellie, Evil Dead Rise.
Wow. And this one was fairly tight. There were, in second place, there was a tie between ones that you picked. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So the first runner-up is Kyle Gallner in The Passenger. This has been a thing for a while. So Kyle Gallner, if you don't know, he's kind of flying under the radar as like a modern Scream king. If you don't know who he is, he's been working since Wes Craven's Red Eye in horror. But he was more...
A film I like, by the way.
which is, yeah, I love Red Eye, but he was also in Jennifer's Body, the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. Feel how you want to feel about that, but he was still great in it. More recently, Smile.
The performances in that movie are fine. It just didn't hang together well. I mean, it's got a great cast, you know? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I love the cast from top to bottom. And when I first heard Jackie, you know, Earl Haley was going to play Freddy, I thought, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because he's creepy just as he is, you know? Okay. So, you know, that's going to be great. And then Clancy Brown. And then I was like, oh man, I'm on board. It just didn't come together, but no, I see what you're saying. No, Kyle is a very talented actor.
Yeah. Yeah. More recently he was in Smile and Scream 5. And also The Passenger, which is a film from last year. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of like a road thriller, I guess is the best way to describe it. But he is excellent in it, and well-deserving of the runner-up spot, tied with Mia Goth and Infinity Pool. Now, Infinity Pool is one of my favorite films of 2023. I did not personally pick Mia Goth and Infinity Pool because... and this might be controversial, I love Mia Goth. I don't think her role in Infinity Pool is her best, maybe her best performance she's turned in. I think she's much better as Pearl, but yeah, it's kind of a meme, her in Infinity Pool, and she's pretty good for most of it. She goes a little, she just starts to chew the scenery, let's just say, in the third act. I think it's become a meme at this point. Going,
there's somebody over at Jay of the Dead's horror movies that's not gonna like you.
Well, so
not
this is
like those comments.
Well, this is my second or third favorite horror film of 2023. I love it, and I love her in it. I just personally, I went with Kyle Gallner as my pick. But
I hear you. I'm just saying, when Dave Z hears this, I've watched your back. You know, he's got the Joe Pesci voice. He's from New York. You know, and he loves Mia Goth. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll lock my doors. But Alyssa Sutherland, well-deserved win for Ellie in Evil Dead Rise. I think that's a popular choice. I think a lot of people are saying that, you know, she was one of the best parts of that movie. We've talked about Evil Dead Rise. It's not personally our favorite. I mean, we both enjoyed it, but it's tough competition. And
the first time I watched it, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
The second time I watched it, I thought it was very good, and I really loved the ending. But no, it's not. I mean, of the four, you know, Evil Dead, I mean, even if you throw in Ash versus the Evil Dead, which I love, love that TV show, one of my favorite TV, and they canceled that. It broke my heart. A pox on you, stars. but no, it would be at the bottom.
Right. But she was fantastic in it. And yeah, well-deserved win. And this is a tight category. I might even say this is a more competitive category than Best Actor. And we might see why. I kind of screwed up Best Actor this year, but we'll get into that when we get around to it. But yeah, fantastic category, this one. Even the one that received the least amount of votes, Liam Cunningham in Last Voyage at the Demeter, I thought he turned in a respectable performance as the kind of stoic captain on the Demeter. I thought he did a great job. So.
He was one of the few things I liked about that movie. That movie made, there were plot holes big enough to drive, you know, a Sherman tank through in that film that I think could have easily been fixed. I don't really, and that kind of leads into our next category is that, you know, you kind of have to pay attention to those things. But no, he's great. He's always great.
Yeah. Yeah, so that sets us up pretty well. Do you want to get into our next category?
So shall we talk about best screenplay for a horror feature?
Let's do it.
Regardless of the fact that a narrative can change in production, boy, that's the truth, the screenplay makes or breaks the quality of a film. I just accidentally hit something. Even in the least competent hands, a great script shows signs of promise. Give a subpar script to professionals and they're not going to turn out a good product. Garbage in, garbage out. But the scripts of these five films took intriguing concepts and story beats and gave the filmmakers all the necessary tools to deliver, and deliver they did. But there can only be one winner. And the nominees are Resurrected, Joe Rechtman. The Passenger by Jack Stanley. Infinity Pool, Brandon Cronenberg. El Conde, I hope I'm saying that right, Pablo Larraín and Guillermo Calderon. and Godzilla Minus One, Takashi Yamazaki. And the winner is Godzilla Minus One by a landslide.
Yeah, by a landslide, 75% of the vote went to Godzilla Minus One. And once again, we have Amy Swan in the comments saying, if Godzilla Minus One is a choice, I'm picking it. Which, fair enough. Yeah, a fantastic script. And this is same with cinematography. It's most impressive that they pulled all this off on a smaller budget with these restrictions, right? And were able to pull off not only a fantastic Godzilla film, but also a fantastic Godzilla period piece. It's a totally believable period piece, which is insane for what they were given to work with. So, absolutely fantastic. A few others in there. We haven't actually talked about El Conde. I started the film, I never finished it, but I've been hearing a lot of buzz about it.
Yeah,
I think it's one I'll have to revisit. But yeah, I was hearing a lot of buzz about screenplay and cinematography. Infinity Pool, Brandon Cronenberg. I think Infinity Pool was a fantastic script. It's not my favorite Cronenberg, Brandon Cronenberg film, but I think it might be my favorite script of his. So there's that. Once again, The Passenger.
And that's what you voted for, correct?
I did vote for Infinity Pool, yeah. The way that Brandon Cronenberg executed it had some flaws. I'm a huge, by the way, if you don't know, I'm a huge Cronenberg guy. I've been working for a year now, what feels like a year at least, on this big Cronenberg video, which is inflating over time and is kind of getting out of my hands. But also The Passenger.
I'd be with you if it was David Cronenberg. I haven't yet to become a fan of Brandon Cronenberg.
Well, that's where we diverge. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of Possessor. Possessor is one of my favorite films in the past decade.
I just could not emotionally connect with it at all, whereas David's never had that problem. I mean, we talked about The Dead Zone.
Yeah.
How great is Christopher Walken in that? How easy it is to relate to him? How much sympathy do you feel for Jeff Goldblum and then Gina Davis in The Fly? I mean, his dad does a much better job of that.
Well, he's still early on. I mean, we see, you know, David Cronenberg had a rocky start starting out. So maybe we'll see what goes on with Brandon Cronenberg.
Do not besmirch Shivers in my presence.
I love Shivers. I'm not even talking about Shivers. I'm talking about some of the early stuff.
You're talking about more of the stuff even before that. Some of the,
right, okay, which I might get into in my video if that ever,
okay,
ever comes out. But also Resurrected was on this list, which is one I haven't seen, but I've heard a lot of people buzzing about.
I liked it. I did like it. Jay of the Dead recommended it to me. It was streaming on Tubi for free. I'm not sure if it still is or not, but that's where I watched it. And no, I really enjoyed it. It didn't make my top 10 list, but I would recommend it.
Cool. All right. Well, that Godzilla Minus One ran away with screenplay, but up next we have Best Musical Score.
And again, this is Kismet because you're the musician. I played bass in a punk band, not because I liked punk. It's because I could only play four strings and three chords, and so hence I could only play punk. You're the musician, so take it away.
Oh, dare I read this read here?
Of course.
More often than people care to admit, wow, the musical score of a film can elevate or even save the project. The best film scores not only enhance the emotional weight of the narrative, but also linger in the mind long after the credits roll. Below are five heavy hitter scores from industry veterans, but who will come out on top? Here we go. Here are the nominees. The Last Voyage of the Demeter by Bear McCreary, Birth Rebirth, Ariel Marx, Godzilla Minus One, Naoki Sato, No One Will Save You, Joseph Trapanese, Knock at the Cabin, Hurtis, Stefans, Dottir. Wow, what a name. Can I take that again? Knock at the Cabin, Hurtis Stefans Dottir. And the winner is Godzilla Minus One, Naoki Sato.
Wow. And again, pretty much a landslide.
Yeah, yeah. 50% of the vote went to Godzilla Minus One alone. And again, this is Godzilla Minus One sweep. This is three categories in a row. Not only is Amy Swan sticking to her rule, it seems a lot of people are. Whenever they see Godzilla Minus One, that's what they're putting. And for good reason. I mean, that fantastic score, obviously it draws upon some of the motifs of other Godzilla films, but it also has some fantastic original stuff in it, especially the kind of emotional stuff between the main characters. Absolutely fantastic. I didn't quite cry, but I felt it getting a little stuffy in the room. I felt, you know, maybe it felt a little humid around my eye region. And yeah, well deserved.
A little dusty.
Just a little, yeah. But what a stacked category. Last Voyage of the Demeter, you know, again, we talked about this. Very flawed film, but you can't fault the score by Bear McCreary, who is just knocking it out of the park every time. Seems like he's doing every other film score these days. And he did a fantastic job with it. I personally voted for Birth Rebirth, which I thought had a fantastic first two acts and a fantastic score, which really elevated them. It's kind of a weird, it's like industrial, but also orchestral. It's really, really cool. So check that out. But, And No One Will Save You. It's first time showing up on this list, but
which I thought had a good score. I mean, there's hardly any dialogue in the film, you know, at all. And so it relies a lot on the score. I really like that movie a lot.
Yeah, and that's one I still need to see, but yeah, the score is fantastic. That's one I've thrown on and fantastic score. But yeah, Godzilla Minus One, the sweep continues, three in a row. I don't know, can it something stop its momentum? Can anyone out there stop Godzilla Minus One? It's rolling through the city like a force of nature. Sounds familiar.
Yes. All righty, shall we move on to our next category?
Let's do it.
Best kills in a horror feature. You read my teleprompter here. Blood. Guts. If Dr. Freud is to be believed, the emotional conflict of a movie exercises the ego while the kills excite the id. Which of the films below had the most harrowing, funniest, or best executed, pun intended, kills of the year? Here we go. Thanksgiving. Evil Dead Rise. Saw X. When Evil Lurks, Scream 6, and the winner is, no surprise to me, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, this one was a surprise to me. Thanksgiving has amazing kills, but Saw has always been, you know, it's the go-to, you know, the default for kills, but man, Thanksgiving ran away with this one. 55% of the vote went to Thanksgiving alone. And I can't say I disagree. I mean, right from that opening Black Friday set piece to all the way to the end with that dinner scene. Oh, man.
It was, you know, I said this when we talked about our top 10, so I won't repeat too much. I would love it if it had been grittier, like the trailer, the mock trailer for Grindhouse. I was kind of disappointed in that. I kind of saw, you know, the ending coming a mile away. So it didn't make my top 10 list, but it is a fun movie. It's a lot of fun. It's one of the movies that from this last year I can see rewatching. I will definitely rewatch it at some point, you know, when I get time to do so. But we should note, I mean, When Evil Lurks got quite a few votes and Saw X came in third place.
Yeah, When Evil Lurks has just it's just mean kills, really brutal, mean, realistic, like just very uncomfortable kills. I mean, just to name one, I mean, that scene with the, I don't remember if it was a Rottweiler or a pit bull and the child, just really, really rough to watch.
Yeah.
There's just so much uncomfortable. I mean, obviously there's a very memorable scene where a woman's walking down the road and a car is driving up to her, you know, just really, really brutal stuff and really, really harrowing. I mean, that's carried over from Terrifier, Terrified, sorry, but also a movie with really mean kills. So that, you know, that they were amazingly executed kills, but I suspect the reason that it didn't take this the win is because they're just so realistic, you know what I mean? Thanksgivings are so fun and so ridiculous, they kind of have that 80s slasher feel, whereas
it does It really does. And like I said, if I wish he would have shot on film and made it grittier, I think that, you know, that's an idea for future, if they can figure out some way to kind of, you know, alter the film stock so it looks a little like it was made in 1981, like My Bloody Valentine or something like that. I think that would have been better. And, you know, I'm not sure that as much as my wife loves him, that McDreamy was really the person for the role. But again, I walked out of it thinking, well, I wasn't blown away, but I had a good time. And, you know, like watching My Bloody Valentine or Hell Night or something like that from the early 80s or The Prowler, you know. And so, and I guess I shouldn't complain because, you know, we covered The Prowler with Greg Amortis. You can there's no way you can miss that ending. There's nobody left. You know what I mean? And it's like, who's the killer? It's like, well, of course that's the killer. There's nobody left. I mean, you know, so it's not really that big of a deal. But no, it was fun. It deserves it. I was shocked that Evil Dead Rise didn't get any votes.
Yeah, that's the one that surprised me because, I mean, again, sort of like When Evil Lurks, it's a little bit more fun, but there are some pretty harrowing deaths in When Evil Dead Rise, and I think they were really well executed. But yeah, that just shows you how strong the other nominees were. So Thanksgiving takes this one, 55% of the vote, some awesome kills. I don't know where they're going to go with the sequel, right? I mean, it kind of seems like we've seen everything.
I don't either. You know, I don't. I saw that. Of course, when it made that much money, you know there was going to be a sequel.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I'm not sure where they can go either. But Eli will figure it out. If nothing else, he'll run over to his buddy Quentin's and they'll hash something out.
Yeah. I guess you could say that even with like Friday the 13th. It's like, okay, Pamela Voorhees is dead. What is, you know, where do we go from here? Huh? And it's like, oh, well, Jason is actually alive and in the woods, you know.
As I argued during our Friday 13th franchise review, which you can go back and listen to, part two makes complete sense. There is no problem with it whatsoever.
Read the novelization.
The novelization and everything will become crystal clear.
Okay.
Pun intended. Crystal clear at crystal.
There you go.
See what I did there? Okay. Yeah, all right. Clever. You've got the next one, buddy, and this is a big one.
That's right. The next category is Best Actor in a Horror Feature. My read-up isn't much of a read-up here. I'm just explaining myself. I wrote, realizing now that some of the talent on the supporting actors poll should have been contending in the lead spot and vice versa. But I mean, the Oscars always get this mixed up too, so vote on. That was my write-up. Great job. Great job, Jackson. So we'll talk about the nominees afterwards, but the nominees are Dave Bautista from Knock at the Cabin, Kiernan Shipka, Totally Killer, Tobin Bell, Saw X, Nell Verlake, Thanksgiving, Ezekiel Rodriguez, When Evil Lurks, and the winner is Dave Bautista from Knock at the Cabin.
I was shocked by this one. Tobin Bell came in second, but I thought he would run away with it. I really did. And that's not, when I was on Horror Movie Weekly with Jay and Mr. Watson, I said, you know, they asked me what I've been watching lately. I said, well, I just saw Knock at the Cabin. And they asked me what I thought. I thought, well, I think it's just okay. But Dave Bautista showed me he can really act.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we get a little bit of that with Blade Runner 2049. And obviously,
but just a little bit, right?
Right. And with I mean, he's good in Guardians, but that's a comedic role. And then
in Blade Runner, he's just kind of, I mean, he it's either completely over the top or stoic, but here he's got a lot of range in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, in making this list, Dave Bautista technically is a supporting actor in this, but he is the most memorable, so I'll justify that one. But some of these, I mean, like there were some in the supporting category that absolutely, if we're going with that, absolutely should have been leading actors, but whatever. So yeah, Dave Bautista took it with 50% of the vote for Knock at the Cabin. I also was Tobin Bell was my second choice, because he was excellent in Saw X. That was kind of his movie. But a few I put on there, Ezekiel Rodriguez for When Evil Lurks, he was fantastic. I mean, you really see this guy's whole life fall apart. I think that when Evil Lurks succeeds where Wisera the Bone Woman fails in delivering that. I mean, it's that classic person's life falls apart. It gets worse and worse as time goes on. They kind of are digging themselves into a hole and everything is kind of collapsing around them. Their sanity is questioned. It's that kind of thing. That's kind of the same sort of role that Ezequiel Rodriguez is filling in When Evil Lurks. But I just think he delivers it so much better. And the script helps with that too. But yeah, Ezequiel Rodriguez. Also, Nell Verlaike, the lead in Thanksgiving, really impressed me because obviously she's super young, doesn't have a lot of roles, but she kind of carried this movie. And that, I mean, we see that in slashers in the 80s, right? I mean, it's just these unknowns coming out. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis
Curtis, like before Halloween, had done like Blink and You'll Miss Her, like TV spots and like Charlie's Angels and Columbo.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping that Thanksgiving is kind of a launching point for her. Also, Kiernan Shipka in Totally Killer, two slasher protagonist roles.
Moving out of the shadow of Mad Men. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, that's crazy for her, kind of a career shift, right? Because she was a child actor and now kind of moving into these genre films. So that's exciting. But yeah, Dave Bautista took it 50%. And we have some comments on this one from Greg Bench saying that Sean Patrick Flannery was amazing in Nefarious. I haven't seen it. I know you are a big fan.
Very
of
Very good. And he was great in it.
And Amy is wondering if that's worth seeing. So I guess that answers her question. But yeah, Dave Bautista took it with a healthy lead. And this is another tight category. I'm seeing a possible future in which we could see another Tobin Bell, Dave Bautista head up in the future. I don't know. We'll see if it happens.
Well, I would have voted for Tobin Bell, so I'll just put that there.
Okay.
I loved Dave Bautista in it, but I would have voted for Tobin Bell.
All right. Well, we're moving into our last two categories. Very exciting. We'll probably want to start with the one on the left.
Let's do it. Let's talk about best. And you can probably hear some puppies whining in the back because, yes, obviously somebody's outside that they want to go see. But anyway, if you can bear with me, best horror legacy sequel. 2023, continue the trend of studios dropping sequels to legacy franchises. Two mixed results. Some were justified entries, those time-tested series, while some were less than that, and that would be accurate. So our nominees are Scream 6, The Exorcist Believer, Evil Dead Rise, The Nun 2, and Saw X. And the winner is Saw X.
Yeah. You can see I put next to The Exorcist Believer in the categories, I put LOL next to The Exorcist Believer because it had to be there. I mean, it's one of the horror legacy franchises, and there was a new entry in 2023, and that's the mixed results I was talking about there. But yeah, other than that, and I haven't seen The Nun 2, other than that, a strong year. Scream 6, I thought was better than Scream 5. I know you disagree, but... Scream 6 strong, Evil Dead Rise super strong, and Saw X, of course, one of the strongest Saw films in years.
In a long time. Yeah. Even though it had serious plot holes, I don't know how Amanda brought all that stuff down to Mexico, but I don't know how you get that through TSA it would have been TSA because post 9/11, but no, I love Saw X. Didn't see Nun 2. Exorcist Believer, good first 45 minutes, and then it just falls apart. Hmm. Scream 6, I did really like, but no, Scream 5's better. But you voted for Evil Dead Rise.
I did, yeah. That was the only one of these that ended up on my top 10 list. I think it was the strongest contender, and even though we've said this, you know, that it's technically the least good of the Evil Dead films, I think it's higher in quality than any of these other films. Saw X I enjoyed. I had problems with it, and I enjoyed that. Scream 6, like I said, I enjoyed. And there was no way Exorcist Believer and The Nun 2 are going to even get a sympathy watch from me. So you can see that literally 0% of the votes went to.
What do you think? We've got the Omen prequel coming out.
I don't know, man. I haven't even seen the trailer. So I actually, interestingly, I recently watched The Omen, the original Omen, for the first time. I had never seen it before, and I watched it recently.
Oh, you're kidding.
I got the DVD at Goodwill, and I watched the film.
I've got the box set, and it is well worth having, even though I think part two is crap.
Sure. Same with The Exorcist, I mean.
Yes. And here we go again. Hi, Clark. Everybody say hi, Clark.
Hi, Clark.
He's a nervous little guy. I mean, we've got the Omen prequel coming up, and, you know, so we'll see where that goes, right? Yeah. Exorcist Believer, the first hour had so much potential, and then it just kind of fell off. I was really, like, when I first started watching it on Peacock one night when I couldn't sleep, it was just like, why is everybody complaining? This isn't bad at all. And then it proved me wrong. It just went bonkers. But no, Evil Dead Rise I thought was solid. We've talked a lot about it. Scream 6, solid. Saw X, really good. And so we'll see what happens this year with Legacy sequels. I'm not sure when Thanksgiving 2, I imagine next year, I would guess, but who knows? Yeah.
Get a million of them. You just know we will. I think that's pretty much a given, that there will be a million, Legacy sequels, but some of them are good as we've seen here. And Saw X and Evil Dead Rise, really, really strong first and second picks. But yeah, now we're moving on to the biggest, category, I don't even know where I'm going with this. It's Best Horror Picture.
Yes. Horror Picture of 2023. So take it away.
Some might say the best picture, period, depending on which one you picked. But
I don't know. I really loved Oppenheimer. So I'll just say that.
Sure. Yeah. By the way, and we were talking about this, I haven't seen any of the Best Picture nominees this year, which is bringing shame to my ancestors. I definitely need to see a few of those, but yeah, Best Horror Picture. I have seen all of these, nominees, and I'm very excited to talk about them. Let's just skip the write up. This is the best horror film of the year. It was a tough running here to fit them into five films, but I think I've picked a diverse cast here, and I'm excited to get into it. So here are the nominees for Best Horror Picture: Bo is Afraid, When Evil Lurks, Godzilla Minus One, Thanksgiving, and Infinity Pool. And the winner, with 50% of the votes, was When Evil Lurks.
Wow. Somebody finally toppled Godzilla.
Yeah, and Godzilla was up there with 20%, but yeah, When Evil Lurks stole it this year. If there had been a foreign films category, I guess When Evil Lurks and Godzilla Minus One would have been battling it out again. But yeah, just a fantastic group of films here. When Evil Lurks was on both of our top 10 lists. I think most of these were on, I mean, I know Infinity Pool was on mine, Bo is Afraid was on mine, Thanksgiving was on mine. All these were on mine at least. Just a great, great, great group of films here. Very diverse between Godzilla Minus One, When Evil Lurks, just very, very different. But
very different tones there, yeah.
Yes. But yeah, so very exciting. Some might argue, you know, just as I don't believe that Godzilla Minus One is fully a horror film. I mean, genre is fluid, it's whatever. But Bo is Afraid, some people might have an issue with me putting here. But it's my favorite movie, and it had to be on Best Horror Picture. No, I also... We can have a discussion. I also think it's a horror film. I think Nathan agrees with me because we talked about it in Horror Movie Podcast. But yeah, just a great, great group of films. The only one that received no votes, surprisingly. Infinity Pool, the new Brandon Cronenberg film, no votes.
So that's what happens when Bill Van Vagel refuses to pony up and be a Patreon, because he would have been that one vote. He would have voted for it just because, bless his Canadian heart, he can't help himself. You know, he would have had a Tim Hortons in one hand, and he would have had to have done it. Yep.
And maple syrup in the other, and he would have, his syrup-soaked hands would have clicked Infinity Pool. Yeah. I can only imagine Canada is exactly what you see in Strange Brew. I think probably.
Yes, it is.
Exactly like
yes,
that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So, yeah. But I also feel that probably the reason Infinity Pool didn't get any votes is because people were torn. I mean, I loved Infinity Pool, but as you can see, I didn't vote for it. So, I mean, these are all super strong. So I think there are just other things pulling.
Yeah, I mean, Wind Evil Lurks won pretty heavily, at tie for second place with Godzilla Minus One and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I can see that because they're both fun movies. And then Bo Is Afraid, you know, in third place, you know, with 10%. But no, it's hey, look, I'm not going to argue. When Evil Lurks, like I said, it's ironic, and this has happened before, and it'll happen again. I will watch Thanksgiving again. It didn't make my top 10 list. I will never watch When Evil Lurks again, and it was my number one.
Yeah, there you go. That's how it goes. But yeah, this was a lot of fun to go through these categories and just kind of relive, because I'm seeing all these movies in my head as we talk about them. So it's kind of fun to just relive these and talk about 2023. This is like the funeral for 2023. We're talking about all the good memories and forgetting about all of the Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honeys.
Right.
Which I will be seeing the sequel of in theaters opening. But did you hear that?
Why would you waste your time?
They've got,
you will get to an age. You will get to an age when you're like, I just don't want to waste that much of my life. You just won't want to do it. Yeah, we've got 2024. We talked about in the top 10 list, but you know, I'm looking forward to it. There are a handful of movies that I'm really looking forward to. Of course, Lee Winnell's The Wolfman. We talked about that.
Yeah.
He handled The Invisible Man very well. It's going to be interesting to see how he does The Wolfman with Ryan Gosling. And I guess it's set in current day. That's the rumor anyway. And then, you know, we've got, I know you're excited about Robert Eggers' Nosferatu remake.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Bill Skarsgård? Oh man.
Yeah. Bill Skarsgård, Willem Dafoe. It's a stacked cast for sure. And one of those time honored stories, obviously it's Dracula. But yeah. Very excited to see how he takes it, because you know Eggers, he's got that eye for period and that eye for detail. So I'm excited about that.
He does.
But it seems like a lot of films are coming out right at the tail end of the year. It's kind of like we've got a drought for a while with one or two releases, and then
it's going to hit heavy October through December. October, I think, is when we're going to get The Wolfman. And then it's December when we'll get, I think, Nosferatu and Jordan Peele's untitled horror movie. So can't wait for that one. Everybody knows what a huge Jordan Peele fan I am. And he's releasing it on Christmas Day. And obviously, if you've seen Key and Peele, you know he's a huge Gremlins fan. So who knows what this is going to be. Maybe a Christmas horror? Maybe?
Yeah.
Of course, we've got Terrifier 3 coming out, which looks like it's going to be a Christmas-themed Art the Clown.
Ooh.
So we'll see where that goes. The remake of Salem's Lot, I guess, is getting dumped to streaming. It's been pushed back and pushed back. That's not a good sign, but who knows? You know,
Stephen King said he likes it, but Stephen King says he likes most things except for The Shining. So I don't know.
Maybe. when Stephen King says the only movie of his, that's been adapted from his work is the greatest movie that's ever been adapted from his work, that's the only one he doesn't like. His taste is a bit suspect.
Sure. But I think the fact that he spoke out and said, hey, studio, why are you letting this rot? You know, he actually took a stand for something, says something. He's not going to put his butt out on the line for the worst movie in the world, hopefully.
Well, he did praise The Dark Tower. So, Yeah, so who knows?
And
yeah,
he made Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, but he doesn't remember doing it. So
you don't really blame him so much.
No, you know, when you're blacking out during shots, you know, you just kind of cut somebody some slack. Explains a lot about that movie, though.
Sure enough.
Yeah, exactly. What is a machine, Stephen? yeah, not very consistent there. Anyway, I am looking forward to 2024, at least the end of 2024. But I'm sure as we got this year with movies like Cobweb and Appendage and Birth Rebirth, so we're going to see those movies pop up on Shudder and so forth, or a movie that you love, The Passenger, that we weren't expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And unfortunately, I don't learn about those until I'm making my top 10 list, right? But yeah, so I'm excited. Hopefully I'll be able to be on the lookout and be able to support those films when they're fresh out to the market. But yeah, I'm just super excited because it's like we always get to this point where we're excited for things to come, but we're kind of waiting. It's like we're anticipating the coming of the Christ, and that it's Robert Eggers I'm talking about. But it's fun to talk about, you know, like I said, 2023 and celebrate these films, which so often I think the wide public and the Academy would rather just sweep under the rug.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Well, folks, it's been fun. It's been a blast. I love doing these. Wish we could have had our usual co-presenters on, Brian Scott and Greg Bench. Wish we would have time to do that. We miss you guys. We love you guys. We love all of our Patreons. And if you are listening to this and wish you could vote, you can next year. So all you have to do is become a Patreon supporter. Go over to patreon.com, search for Father and Son, Watch Horror, and you can sign up for $2.50 a month. You can vote on the Horror Oscars, and you can suggest movies. Plus, you get exclusive content, right? You put up videos up there, Jackson, and we put up bonus pods there that's not available to anyone but Patreon supporters, just behind the paywall. So you can go check all of those out. We got all kinds of stuff on there, like we did a commentary on Get Out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we've got all kinds of stuff there, and we'll be doing more as time allows. The next month for me is going to be busy. The next 4 to 6 weeks for Jackson is going to be crazy. It's going to be a crazy time, but if we can, you know, even if we find 30 minutes, maybe we can jump on and do a bonus pod for the Patreon supporters at some point, like on a Sunday afternoon or something.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do that. But, and you know, once we get maybe a little more reasonable, schedules, we hope to do some more because we've got some great, great anniversaries coming up this year. You know how I love to do anniversaries. Like example, some people consider this a horror movie. Some people just consider it a comedy, some a horror comedy, some a comedy horror. But it is the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters, plus the new Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is about to be released this as we record this week. So there's that, plus it's the 30th anniversary of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's right.
So, yep, we've got that. We've got also, I'd love to do this at some point, it's the 20th anniversary of a movie I really love. A lot of people thought it wasn't enough action, wasn't enough blood, wasn't enough gore, but I love it. And that is Mike Nichols' turn at werewolves, Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer and James Spader in Wolf from 1994.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a fun one. Obviously, 1974, I think often, or 19, you know, the fours decades, get overshadowed by 1974 with Black Christmas and Texas Chainsaw. But this is going to be, yeah, pretty ripe with awesome anniversaries. And obviously, we got to talk Bubba Hotep with Ashley.
Yes.
We got a whole slate.
Yeah, we got lots of stuff on our plate. As soon as we have time, we will record. In the meantime, like I said, when Jackson gets a moment to take a breath and I get a moment to take a breath, like I'm writing a paper right now that I've got to get done quickly. I get that kind of stuff behind me. Then, like I said, at the very least, we'll try to find like, you know, 30 minutes to record a bonus pod or something, especially if we've seen something, like if you're able to sneak away and see the new Ghostbusters movie and you want to talk about it or something like that, then maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll talk about Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And
we
can skip Ghostbusters 2, can't we? We don't need to talk
I
about
have
that.
A soft spot in my heart for Ghostbusters 2.
Oh,
I think it's fun.
It is the 25th anniversary of it. So
there you go.
Or 35th. Yeah, 35th anniversary of
Perfect
it.
Perfect opportunity. To talk about the greatest film of all time, Ghostbusters. Oh. I enjoy it. I think the
I can't tell you how disappointed I was when I left that theater from seeing Ghostbusters 2. It has its moments, but it's just not great.
They control the Statue of Liberty with a Nintendo controller, Dad. You're telling me that isn't Kino?
Gosh, no. It was horrible. But are you looking forward to Frozen Empire?
I am. I
know you like Finn Wolfhard. I'm guessing. I don't think anybody dislikes Paul Rudd.
No, I wasn't the biggest fan of Afterlife. I think it certainly was better than Answer the Call or whatever that rebrand remake was in 2016. I'm cautiously optimistic. The trailer looks pretty good. It looks far more interesting than Ghostbusters had been since Ghostbusters in 1984. So.
The only entry I do not like is Ghostbusters 2. I actually, the reboot with the ladies, I liked. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And my favorite character, that is Andy Garcia, who doesn't want to be compared to the mayor in Jaws. Uh-huh. I loved that. I liked Chris Hemsworth in it. I thought he was funny. I liked Ghostbusters 2016. Didn't love it. I liked it. And then Ghostbusters, what do you call it? 3 or whatever you want to call it. Afterlife, whatever it was. I thought it was good too. I didn't love it, but I thought it was good. I thought it was solid. And I thought it was a lot of fun, you know, when the cameos pop up. So I look forward to Frozen Empire. So we'll see. I do agree. I think the trailer looks good, but at some point we do have to talk about the OG, right? The 1984.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it's going to be, it's daunting also to crack open Nightmare on Elm Street, right? Because it's like, where do you stop?
Oh, we don't have to do number 2.
Okay. So just the first one.
We don't have to do number 2. We don't have to do number. We don't have to do a franchise review.
Number 2 is fun, though.
Number 2 is weird.
It is weird, but it's fun. I'll stand by that.
I like the party scene. I do like that scene. Other than that, the exploding parakeet. It's not even that. Like, every time I bring this up, I know people are thinking, "Oh, he's a homophobe." It's like, no, that's not what I thought was weird. I saw it in the theaters. This is the first Nightmare on Elm Street I saw in the theaters. I was 13 years old, and I just remember being such a hardcore horror fan and being sitting there going, "Wait a minute. Freddy's a god in the dream world and he wants out?"
Yeah, sure.
Why? He wants to be a horribly burned person in real life again?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's an allegory. It's an allegory for coming out or puberty or whatever, but
it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And then the pervy gym teacher and everything. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just a weird movie. It didn't work for me. I think the original is a classic. I think number 3 is fun. I think New Nightmare, I give Wes Craven credit because I think he, at least in his mind, was trying to do something new.
Yeah.
I mean, meta had been done before, but I don't think Wes Craven knew it.
Yeah.
Because Wes Craven, actually, if you read anything about his life, he didn't watch a lot of horror movies. He watched a lot of Bergman films. So,
right.
You know, and he was a bird watcher. I mean, he wasn't sitting around, you know, looking for meta. He kind of thought he'd invented it because he hadn't seen it. And so I like New Nightmare for that. But we could just, you know, at some point we can just do those 3 and stop.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But regardless, we've got a really fun year ahead of us. Glad that we could kick it off not only with our top 10 earlier, but also the 4th Annual Academy Awards, because it's a tradition, and we want to recognize the best of the best.
Yes, we do.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you next time at episode 119. And until then, the family that watches horror together slays together. See ya. Once again, I want to thank our Patreon supporters, Trey Whetstone, Stefan Sitter, Amy Swan, Ryan Bratton, Greg and Pearl Morgan, Nick Stumpf, Kevin Corpy, Kate Lamp, Joel Robertson, Ian West, Ian Urza, Greg Russell, Greg Bench, Dave Becker, Dan George, Carl Davis, Brian Scott, Billy D, Ashley Pinkard, and Andred. Thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. You're the best. Like I've said before, you make this podcast possible.
My name is Steve Spielberg, and I just directed a movie called Jaws, and Jaws is about to be nominated in 11 categories. You're about to see us sweep the nominations. We're very confident at this very moment, and so if you all have a seat, we'll get on with it. This is called commercial backlash.
Right.
I don't know if anybody knows the word commercial backlash, but when a film makes a lot of money, people resent it. Everybody loves a winner, right. But nobody loves a winner. Right.